Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Dear Sugar is supported by...
The universe has good news for the lost, lonely, and heartsick. Sugar is here, the both of us, speaking straight into your ears. I'm Cheryl Strayed.
I'm Steve Almond. This is Dear Sugar Radio.
Oh, dear soul, won't you please share some bittersweet days with me? Check my mailbox every day for any sugar you send my way.
Welcome back to another episode of Dear Sugar Radio. Hi, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm very, very excited about today's show topic.
So am I. We're going to talk about polyamory.
Yes. And I will confess... Well, let's just start here. We are both in long-term monogamous relationships.
Monogamous. You can't even say the word correctly.
I can't even. I have such a phobia about monogamy. But we are in these relatively stable, monogamous, long-term relationships. And yet, I think, I will confess, my wife and I definitely do, we don't spend a lot of time, but we do spend some time thinking about what it would be like to be in another kind of arrangement.
You do?
Yes, we do.
Tell me about that.
Well, I will tell you about it. I will say that some of it has to do with a dark reality TV obsession. I don't know that there's a light reality TV obsession. This is a very dark, it's a show called Sister Wives that Erin is pretty devoutly devoted to. You clearly are not familiar with it.
Or
more importantly, are pretending to not be familiar
with
it.
What network is it on?
I don't know.
I love reality TV.
It's on the Trauma Network. I don't know.
But I can't believe I don't know about Sister Wives.
Okay, well, you're going to get a very skewed version of it. It's a Mormon guy who's got four wives. They're fundamentalist Mormons. And he's got four wives and 17 kids, and they all live in a cul-de-sac in Las Vegas, okay? But what it presents and what we wind up talking about afterwards is that, what would it be like to be in another sort of arrangement? What about something that's a bigger kind of love? And I'm actually, you're giving me a look, but...
Well, I'm skeptical. I'm wondering, does Erin just want somebody to help, you know, take care of the kids and help with the house? Or does she want somebody to be sleeping with you? There's a big difference.
No, I don't think she's saying that. But what I find myself interested in as a topic is why, as I step back from it, why it is that we consider monogamy, long-term monogamy, to be the normative relationship. When back to the Neander Valley, actually clans lived together and it was a lot looser arrangement. And we now live a longer time than we used to. And yet we make the marker of what is a legitimate relationship, a successful relationship, is sexual exclusivity. What about concern and respect and, you know, good intentions and good faith? So I feel like even though Erin is not going to want to set up a polyamorous relationship, and I probably deep down don't want to either, I think that it is probably, if people could bring themselves to it, actually probably a more natural way of moving through our lives, given how disastrous long-term monogamy is, its track record is.
Well, and we know that so often monogamy fails. Dan Savage refers to his own relationship as monogamish,
right?
Meaning that that's what they aspire to. They don't always succeed at that. And I think that if most people are honest, that's what they've had over time.
Right. You know, I always look at the European model where they just accept monogamy is not a perfect system. And this is why there are, quote unquote, indiscretions. And if we stop hyperventilating about that and accept that there's something unnatural and be more communicative about our needs in the first place, then it isn't even, what is adultery, after all? It's deceit. It's not that two people had sex outside the bounds of marriage. It's that there was deceit within the marriage. So that's the big love topic that we'll talk about
that
today.
Is and before we proceed to the first letter, I do want to say the letters we're going to be discussing today couldn't be more different
from this depiction in this reality show you were talking about, the yes. Sister Wives. Throughout time, historically, so much of polyamory was not about big love. It was about a man
yes.
having sexual access to as many women as he wanted.
That's absolutely true. But I will also say, not in defense of the program, but what part of the reason I think it gets under Aaron's skin, it is lonely to be on the island of monogamy. I think part of the fantasy of that program is that you will have literally, quote unquote, sister wives. Now, look, it's a reality TV show. It's distorting all sorts of things. But it's responding to the fact that in our committed, loving, monogamous relationship, we both feel as if there is some other path that doesn't require us to put so much pressure on one another to be all things to each other.
Dear Sugars, I'm a young, newlywed woman who's insanely happy about being with my husband. I could go on about all the reasons why I think he hung the moon. His Bruce Springsteen circa Born in the USA butt is chief among them. But the biggest reason of all is that he lets me be me. I'm not into traditional monogamy. Sex is a very big part of my life, and the desire to have sex with people who are not my significant other makes up a good portion of my sexual identity. Lucky for me, my husband is completely supportive of it and even encourages it. Our exploits make for good pillow fodder. It took us a few years and some misadventures to really feel out where our boundaries are, and I feel confident that we're both on the same page. I'm writing to you because I feel like I've gotten the better end of the deal. You see, I've gotten to take advantage of our arrangement much more than my husband has, and it's starting to make me feel a bit guilty. I think it mostly comes down to me being more extroverted than my husband, so it's easier for me to meet people and act on my attraction. In any case, the result is the same. I get to go out and play, and he is stuck inside. I do talk to him about it to make sure there's no resentment building, and I completely trust him when he says he's okay with everything. What else can I do to make sure that I'm treating my husband the best that I can and make him feel special while I'm getting some on the side? Should I stop indulging this part of my desire until my husband gets to act on it some more? Best, plays well with others.
Plays well with others. You're kind of awesome to me. You spent a couple of years, it sounds like, really feeling out where your boundaries are and really making sure that you're checking in with your partner and that he's okay with the fact that you do, at the moment, have an unequal relationship. But what you need to realize is, if you are doing the work of effective communicating with your partner, unless he's being passive-aggressive to you, unless there's some unsettled sense, you've done what you need to do, which is to check in with him and make sure that even though this relationship in this particular way is not quote-unquote equal, you're both happy with that arrangement.
Yeah, I agree. You hit it on the head, that communication. You know, for any relationship to succeed, you have to be talking, you have to be open. But I think because we don't have a cultural roadmap for polyamory, you really need to construct it yourself. And, you know, in some ways you're inventing that relationship. You know, plays well with others and her husband are making this up from scratch. And so they have to find those boundaries. They have to discuss them. And my advice to plays well with others would be to keep doing it. You know, it doesn't seem like there's a problem right now. The fact that she is worried about a potential problem down the line mm-hmm. speaks so well of her, you know, that she's sensitive to his needs while also getting her own needs met. She's conscious of the fact that she's having more fun outside their marriage than he is.
Right.
And, you know, I think we could have so easily had the letter from the husband
mm-hmm.
who's saying, my feelings are hurt and my wife doesn't seem to get it, why I would
right.
feel jealous and rejected and all of these things. And so I think that keep doing what you're doing because you're doing it right.
Well, here's the thing, though. I agree with some of that, but actually she's unsettled. She feels guilty. And she views this activity that, if she were fully liberated from her guilt, would be, I'm enjoying myself as an indulgence. She says, mm-hmm. I'm indulging, as if there's something too much about it. So it might not be her husband who's placing this on her. He clearly, as she describes it, is okay with it and is quite clear, and she trusts him. She doesn't trust herself, though, because mm-hmm. clearly she's punishing herself by making herself feel guilty. If there was no problem here, we wouldn't have this letter. Mm-hmm. She would just say, I worked it out. I found a guy who gives me the freedom I want, but she's troubled. And it might be that the fact that he's okay primarily being with her is in some ways a repudiation of her notions of monogamy, mm-hmm. which is that it is de facto a restrictive place. But in fact, he seems to be okay with it. And the question is she okay with his being okay?
Right. That's...
Right? It's sort of meta, but there's something going on here where there might be a part of her that's saying, well, I've engineered this situation that was supposed to be perfect, and I worked on it really hard, but now I find myself feeling guilty because the person I'm with isn't out there in the way that I am, and that's making me feel held back by myself.
Right. Well, you know, she, one of the things that she says is how grateful she is that her husband accepts her for who she is.
Right.
And maybe that's where the work needs to be done, plays well with others, is mm-hmm. that you need to think about accepting your husband for who he is yeah. and trusting that he's telling you the truth. He's not bothered by it. And in some ways, you know, when you put pressure, I mean, it's almost like she wants to pressure him to go out and play better, to be less, you know, introverted or whatever mm-hmm. Factors may be contributing to his essentially lack of, you know, a lot of activity outside of their relationship.
Right. Well, think about it. She's deeply committed. She says a big part of my identity is mm-hmm. built around being in sexual relationships with people who aren't my monogamous partner. That's like a big part of how she moves through the world. And that requires her to do some thinking about how invested am I in polyamory as my sense of identity, and how do I feel about my primary relationship being with a guy who isn't as into it as I am. Your perspective and your husband's perspective are both acceptable, beautiful ways of moving through the world as long as you trust each other and trust yourself. The life you want to lead.
Mm-hmm. Later in the show, as you know, we're going to have a guest on the show who's in a polyamorous relationship. And I have a hunch that she might have some really interesting things to say to yeah. plays well with others. So keep listening. How about we move on to the next letter? A different take on a different challenge with polyamory.
I've got my life in such a mess and I don't know what to do. How can I live in this old world and be in love with two? If I said goodbye to my first true love, my heart would break in two. For I'm halfway still in love with him and half in love with you.
All right, so Cheryl, here's our second letter. Dear Sugar, my heart hurts. I am in a relationship with a wonderful man. He is kind, smart, funny, caring, and we love each other a lot. I've never felt this way about anyone I've ever dated before. This man that I'm with is, and pretty much always has been, polyamorous. He has multiple loving relationships with different people at the same time. This is something that I was drawn to about him when we met. I was unsure about my own stance on monogamy. I liked the idea of not needing to be everything to someone. I wanted the space to explore other relationships in an open and ethical way. Then I fell in love. I have realized that I only want to be with him. I have no real interest in being with anyone else, and I suppose I now know that I am a mostly monogamous person. I also know that my partner is not. I have no desire to change him to suit my needs, as I know this is unloving and will only backfire in the end anyway. But I also don't know if I can handle the feelings of knowing he loves people who aren't me. When we are together, I know his heart is with me, and I feel loved and great and sunshine and rainbows. When we are apart, I don't know where his heart is, and it makes me jealous and sad and left feeling disposable and alone. Are these feelings something that every slightly insecure person has in any relationship? I know monogamy won't protect me from jealousy or heartbreak or uncomfortable feelings, but I feel stuck. Do I owe it to myself to stay and try to work through the feelings of jealousy and insecurity and love this wonderful man? Or do I owe it to myself to cut ties and go after what I think I know I really want? Am I giving the universe the finger by saying no to love? There are no guarantees, and there are mistakes and heartbreaks lurking around every corner I turn. What do I do, Sugar? Love, monogamous.
Well, monogamous, I think it's always really powerful and important to listen to the things we say about ourselves. And what she's saying is, I think I know that I need monogamy in a relationship. And, you know, what I want to say to you, monogamous, is you're, you know, that's okay. That instead of by default having a certain kind of relationship look a certain way, what we're, I think, so much trying to do with this show is taking apart things like romantic relationships, sexual relationships, and looking right at them. And so I think, you know, you can love one person and love another person and have that work out. It can also be true that what you want is one partner who also has only one partner, and that is you.
And the heartbreaking thing, monogamous, is that you found that partner.
Yeah.
That's the real heartbreaker here, is you found somebody with whom you really feel the most alive, the most affirmed, and that's a beautiful thing to discover. And the thing that's so painful is that he does not feel the same way. And you have to view him, and Cheryl talks about this all the time, as a kind of teacher for you. Mm-hmm. I now know that I am a mostly monogamous person. And that's a tough lesson to learn in this instance. But no relationship, whatever its shape is, should leave you feeling, quote, disposable and alone.
Yeah.
Even for 10% of the time, the idea that you would be left feeling jealous and sad and disposable and alone, to me, crosses a line that is your own heart trying to instruct you and say, this is not the right relationship. This might be the right man for me, but it's not the relationship for me. And I have to find what I truly want.
Yeah. I think that you can love somebody and figure out that for any number of reasons that you can't have the kind of sustainable relationship that you hope to have with him or her, you know?
It's so tough because the way that our hearts work, when we settle on somebody, and they give us that good feeling, it's like a drug. When they give us that great high, we go, this is perfect. There's nothing more I could want. This is the person. But the crucial ingredient is that they are available to you in the way that you need.
Yeah.
And she tried. I mean, I give you credit, monogamous. You tried. You wanted to explore polyamory in an ethical way, as you say, open and ethical way. I think those words are so important. They speak to your integrity as a person. You didn't just say, wow, this is just, I'm going to let it hang loose in an unexamined way and see where it goes. You sound to me like somebody who was very honest in your intentions. Mm-hmm. And you found somebody and you thought maybe you could make it work. But then when he is with somebody else, you know how that feels deep inside of your body. You know how that feels. And that has nothing to do with your insecurity. That has to do in some ways with your security. You know who you are. Mm-hmm. This relationship has helped you figure out what you need, and you have to listen to that.
Well, and I think too that that's why I feel so clear about this advice we're giving to monogamous is because she didn't begin from the place of being closed down about this question. She actually began engaged with this question. Okay, she from the beginning knew that this was somebody who was polyamorous, and she thought, maybe I can do this. And what she learned in the process is that she can't, and she doesn't want to. And I don't think that she's giving the universe a finger by saying no to love. She's actually not saying no to love. She doesn't have to not love this guy.
Right. She's saying no to feeling disposable and alone.
Right.
And she's sad saying, and jealous.
And she's saying, I love you. And these are the terms under which I want to continue a sexual relationship with you. And then what's great about that is, so she's made a decision for herself.
Right.
And now her partner gets to make a decision for himself.
And that's what I wanted to say, was that really, in the end, this guy has a choice too.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is what we do when there's an unequal amount of love and one person is the lover and the other is the beloved. Is that the onus is always on the lover to make it work, to fix it, to figure out how to jury-rig their own hearts and their own emotional system to make this relationship work. But the truth of the matter is, this guy also has a choice. Maybe a little bit like, you know, plays well with others. A big part of his identity, how he moves through the world, is that he needs to have the things that polyamory offers him. But she is offering him a choice. She's saying, I can't handle that, and if you want me, then we need to change the rules.
Yeah. Monogamous doesn't mention if she spoke to her partner about her feelings.
Yeah. Monogamous, you have to do that. He needs to know that you feel these ways. And there is the possibility, maybe not a large possibility, but there is the possibility that you guys will figure out a path that isn't exactly what he wants, but it isn't exactly what you want, but you can both live with
it. Right.
She says, I think I am a mostly monogamous person. There's a little wiggle room there. Now, her heart will tell her if that mostly is her lying to herself, and really she needs just to be with him. But just know that if you don't get the answer that you need, that you have to, you know, your heart is telling you, you have to leave him behind. He was a great teacher, and now you need to try to go find what you really can get from a lover.
Right. I'm so impressed with both monogamous and plays well with others. They both write with a great sense of boundaries.
Right.
They know how to respect others and themselves. They know their own hearts and desires. And there's that's, you know, that's really advanced and beautiful. And once you have that, you can move forward with so much more ease than you could otherwise. And I absolutely feel convinced, monogamous, that you will find love, and you will find love that's negotiated on the terms that you negotiate them. The other thing I want to say about monogamy is, and polyamory, actually, mm-hmm. is that, you know, life is long.
Right.
A lot of people who begin monogamous don't stay monogamous. A lot of people who begin polyamorous don't stay polyamorous.
That's right.
This is a fluid relationship. You can renegotiate the terms of your relationship at any given time.
Life is long. You know, the other thing that's changed significantly in the last eons, right, 40,000 years, is we now live. We don't live to the age of 35. We live to the age, hopefully, knock on wood, of 85. And we go through all sorts of different phases. I can envision plays well with others when she wants to have a family, if she chooses to have kids, for instance. Maybe her feelings about wanting to be out there in the playground will change necessarily. And what I love and appreciate about these letters is that they are people who, as you say, I have confidence that monogamous, you will find the relationship that you need because you're asking the right questions, not just of your potential partners, but of yourself. There's a real sense of self-exploration and self-examination that you know better than anyone, Cheryl. The first sign of disaster is that somebody truly isn't self-reflective. That's when you know they're going to make bad decisions.
Yeah.
Did you ever have to make up your mind? Pick up a woman and leave the other. Pick up a woman and leave the other behind.
So, let's talk to someone.
An actual polyamorous person.
And she's interesting because she did just what I mentioned. She had one kind of relationship and she changed it into another kind of relationship. Her name is Ariel Greenberg. She's a fantastic poet and essayist. And we're going to give her a call now and she can tell you her story.
Awesome. Hey, Ariel, how you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming on.
Ariel, we're calling you right now at your... Are you in Belfast, Maine still?
Yes, yes.
You know, Steve and I, while we're both have definitely thought a lot and explored a lot, you know, sort of intellectually about the relationships that aren't monogamous, we both, you know, we're basically married and in monogamies. And we're just curious if you could, you know, first of all... Tell us your story. You know, we want to know all the details. We might interrupt you and ask questions.
Yes, I got married in 2001. And at the time, you know, so my husband and I were really on the same page from the get-go, which was that we've both been only in long-term monogamous relationships, but both of us felt we were also both the children of divorced parents. Hmm. And we both felt pretty clear that long-term monogamy is a hard road to hoe, to say the least. And, we were very clear with each other that sleeping with somebody else was not going to be a deal breaker in a relationship. In our relationship, we had no plans to be non-monogamous. It just seemed like that was not the point of being married to one another. In fact, what we did put in our vows was all this stuff about supporting one another's constant evolution and change over the course of a lifetime, because that is the only thing you can count on, is that things will change. And we wanted to really kind of own up to that as a sort of reaction, you know, against, in some ways, like traditional marriage model that we've grown up with. So, but we were monogamous. We spent like the first decade of our marriage having kids, and we had like 3 back-to-back pregnancies, and that was our lives. Like, we didn't sleep.
Yep.
For 10 years. But between pregnancies, I would feel my libido return. And in those moments, it was very clear to me, as it had been from the beginning of our relationship, that I am like a much more sexually driven, sex motivated, I like to say, person. So after we had our last kid and we knew that we weren't going to have any more, my libido came back again. I was in my late 30s and I was like, oh shit, you know, now what do I do? And so I went to Rob and I was like, I think my libido is too big for our marriage. And I think maybe we should explore non-monogamy. And Rob was like, cool. It certainly wasn't our plan to have somebody else come live with us, but we were open to that from the beginning. It's what we're doing right now.
So what happened?
Yeah, what happened?
So Rob says, okay. I'll just tell you my story of your non-monogamy. You know, one day I'm like on Facebook and I've just been so, you know, busy and haven't really kept track of people. And suddenly I see this nice, handsome man in pictures with you on your Facebook page. And I messaged you. Do you remember that? I sent you a message.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Ariel, I'm so sorry that I've been so out of touch. I'm so sorry to hear that you and Rob have broken up. What happened? And you were like, nothing. I still live with Rob. But now that nice man also lives with us. And I was like, Oh, wow, cool. So
how do I get one?
So how did that tell us how that happened?
So yeah, Rob said okay, and we went very slow, and we were very responsible and careful grown-ups about it. So we like read books, and we had lots and lots and lots of conversation. So we did that for a few months, and then, you know, he had a OkCupid profile, and I basically booty called a former lover who I'd been with in my 20s that I'd had like a peak sexual experience with, and you know, had always kind of wondered what happened to him, and we'd fallen out of touch. And so we reconnected, and I started dating him, and Rob started dating a woman, a divorced woman who lived a couple hours away. And so we both sort of started these relationships. And, you know, again, like because we're two different people, we went down two different paths. So Rob, who I think is more sort of serial monogamous by nature, as soon as he found this woman, he was just like, great. Like, I'm just going to focus on this. I was a little bit more like kid in the candy store at first and just thought like, oh, I can do whatever. And I had never had, like, I had never sown my wild oats earlier in my life. I was a very good girl my whole life and had only ever been in long-term monogamous relationships. So I certainly wasn't even remotely promiscuous or anything, but I was kind of like, oh, let me, you know, start a profile on this website and I'll go on this date. And just kind of like, you know, explored for a little while.
Hold on, Ariel, before we move on, I want to ask what I think many people in monogamous relationships, myself included, at this juncture, I want to ask what many of us are wondering. So, okay, you decide you're going to not be monogamous. That's different than your husband comes home and says, yeah, I had sex with someone.
Yeah.
So, you know, how have you addressed those times when you feel jealous, maybe not just only sexually, but even emotionally? Like
right.
You and your husband have been best friends for many years, right? And suddenly he's got this other girlfriend. He's got this girlfriend who he's also having that bond with. I would think that I would feel jealous in many ways, you know, sexually, emotionally.
I mean, it's definitely the number one question that you get. And, so like the first time I went off to see Mike before Rob went off to see his first girlfriend. And
hold on, who's Mike? We explained.
Yeah, who's this Mike character?
Yeah.
So Mike is the guy I was with in my 20s.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Booty called. So he was living a couple states away, and we decided to see each other. And I remember before I left for that, you know, overnight, you know, saying to Rob, like crying to Rob and saying, you know, I love our marriage and I love our life and I don't want to ruin it. And I'm really scared that maybe like we think we've done all this processing for months and months, but like maybe this isn't going to go well. Maybe I'm going to go off and have sex with somebody else and you're going to leave me, you know, like what's going to happen? We didn't know. And we both sort of said like, yeah, we really hope that's not what's going to happen. It doesn't seem like it is, but it could. And I guess we're taking that risk. And it was very scary. And then I got to the hotel with Mike, and it was great. And I came home the next day, and we looked at each other, and I was like, oh, you know what? You're the exact same person you were 2 days ago before you left on this trip.
Okay, it's more questions.
Yeah.
I have more questions.
I have so many questions. My questions have questions.
Okay, so what about Mike? I mean, Mike is, you know, like into you and meeting you in this hotel. And what about that?
So the dirty secret of this is that, which is not a secret, is that he was married at the time still, and he was cheating. And he had been cheating on his wife for half their marriage, basically, at that point, for the last 6 years. And he didn't have children, and that was a big factor for me. But I also think that he felt somewhat envious that I was able to, you know, envious in a good way, like, oh, you're having sex and a fulfilling relationship and you're able to talk to your partner about it and your partner is supportive of you. I think that's what he wanted. You know,
right.
He loved his wife, and at the time he wanted to stay with her, but he also, they did not have a sex life together, and they were not well matched, and he couldn't talk to her about it.
So Ariel, yeah. I just want to ask Cheryl a question, because we have talked about this a lot. Cheryl, and Ariel, weigh in on this as well. What do you think the percentage of married people or people in the long-term monogamous relationship, what is the percentage who, if you presented them at some point in their marriage, when they've reached that point, you've read so many letters, Cheryl, we've both read letters where people saying, I love my husband, I love our life together, or I love my wife, I love our life together, but we don't feel sexually connected, and that part of me is lonely and really wanting. If you laid out the option, if this culture laid out the option, well, there's actually a solution to this that doesn't have to be full of deceit and recrimination and judgment. And that is that you're both freed up to explore other relationships that will give you that sexual gratification, emotional needs, whatever it is. What percentage of people, if that option was there without judgment and recrimination and deceit, would say, yes, I would like to be able to have that as a possibility?
Well, I think a lot of people, because obviously, I think all of us at some point have come up against this in a relationship with somebody we love truly, deeply, dearly, madly. You know, you can either choose celibacy together in a relationship that doesn't have sex.
Which many people do.
Which many people do. You can cheat, which many people do, and lie, be unfaithful. Yeah. You can open your relationship, which Ariel and Rob have decided to do. Or you can reinvigorate the sex life that you have with your monogamous partner. You can do that too, but it takes work. It takes consciousness.
And let me just say to that point, Cheryl, because I think it is a really good point, and I also think it's really important to say it's not always possible.
Right.
Because I do feel like there's, many, many, women's magazines and such, and many books out there about like reinvigorating, rekindling the flame. And frankly, I feel like it's setting women especially up to fail. Because sometimes it's not possible if there are just marked differences in one's sexuality. And those things can evolve over time. So, if you are a woman who's been married to a man for 20 years and you realize that you are attracted to women and you've never really uncovered that about yourself before, there's nothing your man can do.
That's right.
That's right.
Or if you discover you've had a kink your whole life, it is not a good idea to try to rekindle that relationship. That is going to lead to everyone feeling like a failure.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Because you can't make yourself into that, and you can't make yourself not into that if those are things you're into. Sexuality is a weird, complicated, set of synapses and appetites. And if sex was never central to your relationship, probably no amount of work you do is going to make it awesome.
Right.
Which doesn't mean you shouldn't be married or shouldn't, be in love with each other for many, many other reasons or aren't a good partner.
And it doesn't mean it can't be done. I think with everything, and even in these two letters we were discussing before you got on the phone and hearing your story, there are so many different kinds of monogamies, and there are so many different kinds of non-monogamies or polyamories or whatever word you want to use.
Right.
Yeah. So Mike is there, and somehow he gets integrated into the household.
No, we are leaping ahead. So
right.
She and Mike meet in the hotel, and then suddenly Mike himself is having some awakenings, I guess.
Yes, right. So he went through his own very long process. So within a couple months of us starting to see each other, which we only did, maybe once every 6 weeks because we were long distance, I said to him, I need you to tell your wife what's going on. I can't continue like this.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly, within, the couple first times that we saw each other, I was like, oh, I love him.
Yeah.
I think I actually feel super crushed out on him and also giddy about him. And I think I love him. And that was not what I planned or expected. And it was sort of not, really part of the deal that Rob and I had discussed. When we started, we were doing what they call hierarchical polyamory, which is you have a primary partner and then everybody else is sort of secondary and tertiary. And that's not what we do anymore. That evolved because we both ended up having relationships where we were I've been with this person for this amount of time and actually I love them.
Well then,
So things progress with Mike and, over a long process, he leaves his wife and he moves out and they get divorced. And, about a year ago now, actually exactly a year ago, he moved up to Maine, and at first he rented an apartment in town, just 8-minute walk away. but very, very quickly. Because, again, we tried to go slowly, and we had a whole plan about this, and we really didn't know how it would pan out. So we were sort of said, oh, well, he'll live separately, but he'll come over for dinner, you know, three times a week. And this is, you know, by the way, like, we'd been seeing each other for 2 years at this point, and he'd met my kids many times and come up and stayed for the weekend with us and shared holidays with us. And, you know, the whole family knew him well. And I'll also say it's another way in which I was fortunate, which is that, like, Mike and Rob get along really well. You know, I'm not going to say they're, like, besties, but they get along really well, and there's no tension there. Like, just as housemates, they are perfectly happy, you know, smooth-sailing housemates.
Ariel, how about the—I don't want to fix on this because it's particular to particular kinds of relationships, but what about with the kids?
Yeah. So, you know, pretty early on when Rob and I were both seeing other people and starting to introduce those other people to our kids because we were seeing them steadily, we sat down with our older child, who was probably seven or so at the time, and said, you know, so some people believe that you can really only love one person at a time, and other people believe that you can love more than one person at a time, and we love these other people. And she said, well, of course you can love more than one person at a time. I love, you know, mommy and daddy. We were like, right.
A little different, but okay.
A slightly different kind of love. But
right. But she doesn't know about that. I mean, at the time, and even still, like, she hasn't asked any questions about sex yet or anything like that. And right now she's nine, and she says, you know, I have a mommy and a daddy, and I have another grown-up who lives with me who's my third parent, and he is my mother's boyfriend. And we often say, and she's heard this, it's kind of like you have a step parent without your parents being divorced. I mean, our kids just have three, you know, thoughtful, caring adults who love them in their household every day. So I can't really see how that could be a bad thing for them.
Thank you for sharing all of this with us. I think it's going to be so helpful and interesting to so many of our listeners. One question I have is about you and Rob. So did you find that this, you know, your relationship with Mike and his relationship with his girlfriend or other women, has this basically dampened your, you know, whatever romantic and sexual energy you had with each other, or has it heightened it? I mean, what I mean to say is, yeah, are you still lovers with Rob anymore? Or is it, are you basically having a serial monogamy? You went from Rob to Mike.
Right.
Even though you're still in a relationship with Rob, it's you know, I guess, what's the nature of your relationship with Rob now?
So that was also an evolution. I will say, and this, I think, happens for a lot of couples who open up their monogamy at some point. We experienced kind of a renaissance of our sex life, just we were seeing ourselves newly, you know, like, right, re-sexualized beings in the world.
Right.
And we were doing all this exploring and really also all this talking about sex with each other. And so we had, like, a resurgence in our own sex life. And then it kind of, like, went back to normal. And then at a certain point, we were both having such satisfying sexual relationships elsewhere and really figuring out for ourselves, kind of for the first time in our lives, in a deeper way, what we wanted and needed out of our sexual lives, that we didn't go back. Like, you know, you learn a bunch of really important information, and then you kind of evolve out of that realm of your relationship while keeping other parts of it intact.
So it's strangely like serial monogamy within a non-monogamous relationship.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, in that way, like, Rob is totally, quote unquote, like, sexually monogamous with his girlfriend. Like, he now is with a different woman, but, like, so he's monogamous with her. He's not seeing anybody else. But he's married to me, so I guess for the world, the sake of the world, he's non-monogamous because he loves both of us and he is in two relationships, but he's not actually having sex with both of us.
I love that you're expanding the conversation around polyamory beyond sex, that you're saying, look, it isn't just about sex. It's about getting your needs met from other people outside the relationship in any number of ways.
Yeah. That's fundamental to poly. Like, the idea is it's about needs getting met, which may or may not have to do with sex.
What I love, actually, is, like, just that we can be different and we can make different choices and have different lives. And everything that you've said to me today about what's going on with you and Rob and Mike and your family, it just, I'm so happy for you. I think it's just so much the right way, but there is no one way. And if Brian slept with somebody and brought her over to her house and wanted me to watch a movie with her and eat popcorn, I'm just telling you right now, I would cut that bitch.
But Cheryl, what if she was like, why don't I stay home with the kids while you and Brian go out and I'll do the dishes, and then you can all come home and I'll eat popcorn.
All right. So there are some parameters that Cheryl Strait has laid down.
Ariel, that's called a babysitter.
All right, so I'm just happy to be in the room. And Ariel, I have to say that it sounds to me like at every point you've reached a point where you're more honest with one another, with yourself, and even with your kids about what's going on in your lives than most monogamous relationships, where there's some degree of people hiding the truth from themselves or from their partner or from the rest of their family.
Yeah, I think people can live like that no matter what their relationship structure is like. And it's hard work. It's just relationships. Good, real, healthy relationships are hard work. There's no other way to do them, but they're also why we're put on this planet, I believe.
What a pleasure talking with you, Ariel. Thanks so much for taking
the
time.
Thank you for taking it. We're going to call you up next time we have a question about big love.
Awesome. I love it.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. I mean, that was absolutely riveting. Again, we know from the number of letters we receive and just our own lives and our own friends, how many people are mired in long-term monogamous relationships where they do not feel gratified or they feel only partially gratified. We're so almost socialized to follow certain roles no matter what deprivation results from it. And in a way that doesn't feel at all resentful, she said, actually, why is that the paradigm? And it's probably now, if you want to think about it, one of the happiest marriages.
It is. That's what I was just going to say. It's like listening to the way Ariel has talked about the way their love has transformed over time. You know, I think so much of what we talked about today will make so many people out there feel reassured about their desire to have sex with others. I also want to address people who, like me, are, you know, committed to monogamy in their relationships. We're not saying that one or the other is the better path. We're saying that both are complex and they demand a lot from us.
Right. And I think that where people get into trouble is it's monogamy that is just sort of the default system.
Right.
And there's all this judgment around it, as opposed to saying, boy, you really have to work. If you want to be in one monogamous relationship and not feel deprived, that's hard work. There's a lot of hard work to remain connected to one another, not just sexually, but within the whole realm of intimacy. And it's hard to make it work with one person over the long haul, especially as people change and evolve. But it's not impossible. And it's the same thing that I think polyamorous or non-monogamous people take for granted, which is you have to examine your needs and where you feel deprived and where you feel you need more and be able to articulate that to your partner.
Yeah. I think that this conversation, like every conversation that we've had on this show, it always makes me go home more open-hearted, more eager to talk to Brian about our lives. It really sort of opens me up to the idea of really working to be a better person. And I hope that listeners feel that too. You know, so often what we are doing here is simply grappling with all of these questions. We're coming up with more questions than we are answers in the course of our so-called advice giving.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
We're offering counsel, but I think that what we're doing is also just shedding light on all of these struggles and secrets and sorrows and questions that
and
we
doubts.
All have
yeah.
and doubts.
Mm-hmm.
Brian and I have been together for 19 years and we say that we're in a monogamy. Well, we haven't been monogamous. There have been times of failure in our relationship. That monogamy has been cracked a time or two in our relationship. And that's been hard. And when that's happened, we've had to talk. In this conversation, it makes me want to go home and say, okay, let's keep talking about what we want.
Right.
Let me tell you about my first lover.
This brings us to the end of another Dear Sugar Radio show.
Yes. Sadly, we are produced proudly by WBUR in Boston, and we're produced and edited by the amazing mistress of pain, Lisa Tobin.
She, the Empress of the Airwaves.
The Empress
like
of the Airwaves. We are engineered by Jim Brunberg.
You and Jim Brunberg, you really have a thing going on.
Yeah, you're no longer the primary relationship. Okay, you're secondary. All right, we are produced here in Portland, Oregon at the Digital One Studios. We should say that. And also, we need to tell people that they can write us letters.
Please write to us at DearSugarRadio@gmail.com. We read every single letter, we ponder them, and we just really love getting your letters. So thank you very much. Also, you can write to us with your feedback about the show, your love,
your hate, your
suggestions.
Fetish.
Suggestions. No hate.
No
hate. We're sugar. Sugar is love. Sugar is love.
Love and fetishes.
Well, I've got to.